Welcome to Conversations. I'm your host, Doug Duin, and joining me today is Dion Kohler, the author of the book More Than Play, How Law, Policy, and Politics Shape American Youth Sport. Dion, thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks so much for having me, Doug.
Well, before we started recording, I was talking to you about how I grew up playing youth sport, and you did as well. And when you're in it, maybe you just don't recognize that there's some issues. So one of the issues you talk about in the book is a power dynamic issue. Can you explain that?
So I mentioned in the book, one of the reasons why some of the issues we see in youth sports with overtraining and kind of what we call professionalization, the epidemic of sports injuries, hyper-competitiveness, very expensive, lots of travel, all of those things. Why do these things keep going? And why don't we give kids more of a voice? And the power dynamics are really one of the reasons why, because kids are at the bottom of kind of every hierarchy that's going in the youth sport equation. So there's the parent-child dynamic, where parents, of course, for very good reasons, have authority over their kids. There's the coach-athlete hierarchy that's going on. And so parents don't want to disturb coaches. And so the kid's really at the bottom of the pecking order there. And so when kids might say, I'm in pain, I've done too much, I'm burned out, et cetera, oftentimes, because of the power dynamics, we don't always hear them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, actually, anecdotally, when I was trying out for my high school baseball team, we were doing sprints and something happened in my right leg and something popped and I couldn't continue with the sprints. And I remember my coaches looking down on me for that and it kind of having an effect on me. Like, and it made me feel like I had to keep playing or keep participating in drills, even though I was hurt. Is that a common thing that you see?
Yeah, I mean, and I want to be clear that the book is not sort of trashing youth sports. You know, there's so many great things involved in youth sports, so many great coaches and people who are really doing what's best for kids. But what the medical community has talked about now for years and years, Doug, is that there is this epidemic of overtraining injuries. And what we also know is that because youth sport coaching is not a professional career in this country, I think it should be. There's certainly enough business to support it. Most of our coaches aren't medically trained. They don't have the understanding of sports medicine to know when a pop is a problem, for instance, when to spot a concussion, how to do that basic first aid. And so we do have kids who get injured and we have coaches doing their best, but they don't often know that they're pushing kids too much, too hard, too fast, especially for developing bodies. To state the obvious, Doug, kids are not adults. Their bodies aren't quite there yet. Their minds aren't quite there yet. And so without kind of fully trained coaches who can appreciate this, there can be problems.
Yeah. And a lot of people in my age bracket have nagging injury issues that we can trace back to our days playing youth sports. Is this because of the competition, the desire to win? Is it the professionalization of youth sports that is maybe causing some of this a little bit?
Well, it's really all of the above, Doug. So one thing we know in sports, we can't take injuries out of sports. There are going to be injuries, and to some extent, you know, getting injured, falling down, and learning to get back up. Those are one of the important life lessons that we talk about with respect to youth sports. But what the medical community has emphasized is beyond just the kind of these things happen in sports injuries are really the epidemic of overtraining injuries. And overtraining is directly traced to this idea of early sports specialization, where children are encouraged to pick the sport, become really, really good at that sport. Epidemic of overtraining injuries also is traced to the hyper-competitiveness of youth sport. We have kids competing year-round now, so their bodies are working at being good and performing at a high level, and that just increases the risk of injuries. So the way that we predominantly do youth sport today, you know, there's nothing wrong with playing to win, of course, but when you are training to win, playing to win, and you're doing that year round and not giving your body a break, not sport sampling, but kind of focusing only on one, it can be a problem.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned that these coaches are not professionals. This is not a career path for them. Most of them are volunteering. Are there tools available for these coaches to have more access to knowledge about injuries or things that kids should have access to?
Yeah, and there are lots of tools out there, and there are lots of terrific organizations and youth sport providers who are really working on this. So, for instance, in the Olympic and Paralympic movement, there are national governing bodies that have all kinds of information for coaches and the American development model and ways that coaches can best support children's development through sports. Positive Coaching Alliance. There's lots of great things out there. I think what the issue is that from a law and policy perspective, we don't have, for instance, any minimum national safety standards or requirements that a coach have a background check or have these sort of certifications. We don't have any of that, as we would do with, and as parents expect we do, with other types of products and experiences that children participate in. Similarly, there are very few state laws that have any requirements. So it's pretty easy to go out there and be a youth sport provider. So while there are these terrific organizations and lots of initiatives to make youth sports safer and more developmentally appropriate, it's a patchwork, Doug. And so we don't have the kind of uniformity that we would hope for given the number of kids who are participating.
Yeah. And I'm fully in agreement with you that youth sports are a good thing, that participating, being a part of a team, being physically active, those were all really good things for me. There are a lot of kids out there who don't play sports. And now, what differences, if any, do you see in the development of kids who play sports versus the ones that don't?
Well, that's a really interesting topic. And I was very surprised to learn in my research for the book that we don't have a lot of good data. As you said, I believe this as well, that my youth sport experience contributed to my development, my future career. Lots of people believe that, and I'm sure that it's true. But we don't have a lot of good data that says you need to do youth sport in the way that we're doing it today. Heavy emphasis on specialization, on travel, expensive uniforms, competing year-round. We don't need to do it in that way for kids to get the benefit of sports. That actually the life lessons that come out of sports, it's quite variable. There can be some quite negative life lessons that come out of today's youth sport model. So the idea that we take as a given, which is that isn't sports just good for kids, way overstates it, actually. And you don't need kids. Kids don't need to be as intensely engaged in youth sports as they are to get the benefits of participation.
And now, can you talk to me, in the book, you do mention the difference between playing sport and just play. What are the differences to you?
Well, there's actually quite a lot of literature on this, and this was something else that really did surprise me. So play is an activity that all of us enjoy at various ages, and it's an activity that is self-directed. We decide when to start, when to stop, who we will engage in play with, what the rules are, so to speak. And the key differentiator for play is all the benefits stay with the person playing. Sport is a very different kind of experience because sport has the potential to not just benefit the person playing sport, but all kinds of other stakeholders as well. So if you think of, say, LeBron James, he can play basketball and enjoy that experience very much and get a benefit out of playing. He can have fun and enjoy the camaraderie and the winning and connection. But while LeBron James is playing basketball, he's generating a lot of money and also benefits for fans and team owners and the like. So the difference between play and sport is how are we generating benefits? Do they all go to the athlete or do they go to lots of other stakeholders? And what I conclude in the book is that youth sport is very much generating a lot of benefits for a lot of other stakeholders.
Yeah. And in fact, you mentioned that youth sports makes money for state and local governments, which is something that I'd never really thought about. Do you feel like that's a good or bad thing? Because I think like a small municipality having a thing that they can look at and say, hey, we're generating revenue is great. But there's always possibility for downside and or misappropriation. So what do you think of the state and local governments making money off of youth sports?
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head, Doug. And It is a complicated picture. So, to give you an example, I live outside of Washington, D.C., and when my son was involved in youth hockey, I wondered why we were always going to Detroit and Pittsburgh for hockey games. And the answer is what is known as youth sport tourism. These are cities, these are states that have emphasized developing youth hockey facilities and youth sports facilities and attracting tournaments to their locality because they know that parents will spend the money and it will occupy hotels and restaurants. And this is an explicit kind of policy of state and local governments, many, to really revive communities. And so it can be a good thing. I think the downside of it, Doug, one of the most serious downsides is that it makes youth sports participation really expensive. My daughter was a gymnast. Again, as a little kid, we competed in gymnastics meets that she had to go to down in Disney World many times. And on the one hand, it's great. And I was glad that my family had the means to afford that. But most don't have the ability. And of course, it got expensive over the years to really keep up with that level of travel. And so youth sport tourism can be great for the state and local governments, but it can be bad for families to the extent that they just can't. It sort of prices them out of youth sports.
Yeah. And on top of that, I have a really good friend who has two kids, both in travel leagues. And he says that his time is constantly on the road. He's always gone, more than just the financial aspect, but it eats into his entire life. He's always traveling. He's driving across the state. They're taking flights places. That, aside from the cost prohibitiveness, is very prohibitive just on people who don't have that access to leave as often.
That's right. And it has an impact on families in so many ways outside of cost. And that's one of them, just sort of family disruption. I know for a while, key hockey tournaments occurred over the Thanksgiving holiday. Pretty soon we weren't spending Thanksgiving with relatives because we were headed to, you know, Toronto or wherever. So there's that, of course. But it also, all that heavy travel, one thing that happens is, to some extent, many parents see these things as sort of vacations. Hey, the family's on the road and we're going here or there. But for the kid who's competing and you're doing three or four, say, games in a weekend, this is also, the research shows, what can contribute to burnout and to injury.
Mm-hmm. Now, on a different note, as long as we're talking about the money aspect of things, I know I wouldn't consider college athletics youth sports, but it is really the moment where you go from youth to adult sports. With the NIL being introduced a few years back, and there's a lot more money going into the players' hands, do you see that maybe extending beyond college and universities and maybe coming down? And do you think it's a good or a bad thing that there's money going into the players' hands the way that it is now?
Well, I think, and that's a really big question, Doug, and we could do a whole other segment just on that. But I think fundamentally it is a good thing in this sense. You have a lot of kids and parents, families, who are investing a lot in their children's sport development. So having them be able to share in some of the revenue that is generated when they finally hit, say, the college level or even the high school level is actually fundamentally a good thing. This can be a way for people to achieve financial stability and get payback for the very expensive proposition that is engaging in youth sports. I don't think there's any reason why all that money should be going necessarily just to sports sponsors. So the idea that the people sort of driving the system can share in that is something that I think is fundamentally good. What we're seeing now, of course, at the college sport level is an entire reorganization of the system. And that's really not because of NIL money per se, Doug. It's really because the Supreme Court ruled several years ago, back in 2021, that one aspect of the NCAA model violated antitrust law. The Supreme Court ruled unanimously. You almost never see that. And there are other courts, lower courts, who have for years now said there are antitrust problems with the NCAA model. So we are now seeing a more free market in college sports. That's going to take some time to sort of shake out and settle. But in terms of a kid who's coming through sports, investing to become that player who can play at an elite level, having them be able to share in some of that is actually a good thing for their lives.
Yeah. Now, I know we've talked about a lot of different things in this conversation. What solutions, if any, would you like to see enacted to kind of fix some of these problems?
Well, I think one of the solutions is something that you and I, when we were chatting before this, we talked about, which is just awareness, Doug. You know, you and I said, gosh, when we were doing youth sports, we just assumed, hey, isn't this the way it's supposed to be? And so one of the things I hope for with the book is just to sensitize folks to say, this is not the way it has to be. There are lots of different ways it could be. And among the solutions are things that I talked about. I co-chaired recently a congressional commission, a bipartisan commission, that studied the state of U.S. Olympic and Paralympic movement. And Congress asked us to look at the pipeline, and that includes youth sports. And among the solutions that we proposed was, for instance, consider a baseline national safety standard. Not having the feds micromanage T-ball leagues, but just setting kind of a minimum baseline safety standard. So parents anywhere in the country who know that their kids are enrolled in sport, they know that, for instance, that coach has a background check. States can do a lot more as well on minimum safety standards with requiring things like background checks. Just sort of minimums, again, not micromanaging, so that parents can have confidence that the experience is a safe one. In addition, we have to look more at getting back to public funding for sports. 30, 40 years ago, there was so much more public funding on the state and local level for recreational sports opportunities for kids. Now, that's mostly gone. There's very little of that. And so be active on the state and local level and say, let's get back to kind of more publicly funding these really wholesome, healthy activities. Surveys I did as part of the commission work showed that the American public is really behind more public funding for youth sports. We know it's a good activity and we want to help more kids get involved.
Yeah. And I think that's a great, I think everyone should be involved in some form of play if you can, and removing financial barriers or other barriers, I think is a great thing. Again, I'm talking to Dion Kohler, author of the book, More Than Play, How Law, Policy and Politics Shape American Youth Sport. Dion, before I let you go, is there anything that any lasting thought that you think our listeners should know?
Well, I the lasting thought I would leave folks with is that, sport can be whatever we want it to be. And so I think too often we enroll our kids in sports or we observe sports as fans and we say, it's got to only be this way. And that's something that, you know, we see the NCAA telling us about the college model, for instance. And I think it's good to remember that change in sport can feel hard. But if you go back historically and look at changes like Title IX that open up sports to girls and women, every time we work to set policy to open up sport to more people, the games always get better and we always enjoy it more. And I'd ask people to keep that in mind.
Yeah. Well, Dion, thank you so much for having this conversation. It really, I mean, like you said, we talked about it before. You're growing up, you just think everything is the way it should be and that it's normal. And so it's a bit eye-opening to see that there are some problems, and it makes me, you know, remember back when I was a kid and see those experiences a little bit differently, not negatively, but just differently. And I think your point about awareness is great. So thank you so much for having this conversation with me.
Thanks so much for having me, Doug.
And thank you for listening. Conversations is a public affairs program of this station.